every hour of every day. Claudia motioned with her head in the general direction of the door. As your logistics person, I feel like I have to point out that when the team you built is gone, your only ally other than me is Joel Wilson, a man who spends his nights dreaming about how to destroy you. He said, leaning back against the wall. I can make us disappear, Mitch. We can get Anna and fade away. The only person who would have a chance at finding us would be Irene, and she wouldn't be looking. Even if some other intelligence agency got lucky, what would they do? Any of the people they'd send probably owe you their lives, and the three or so private contractors good enough to take the job are also smart enough not to. What about what's happening in Saudi Arabia? What about it? She said in an exasperated tone. They brought this on themselves. If Nassar and ISIS want it, let them have it. He wasn't surprised that she'd see it that way, but the truth was far more complicated. While it was a fact that this was a wound the royalty had inflicted on themselves, it was the average person who would suffer. What would happen to them when ISIS rolled across the Middle East? He didn't have to ask, because he'd seen it with his own eyes. And what about America's soldiers who would be sent when the U.S. could no longer stand by and watch the horrors that would be created by a Saudi-ISIS alliance? How many of them would bleed out in the sand? I can't just let this go, Claudia. Then I'm going to ask you again to call Irene. He shook his head. I can't drag her into this. She has to make that decision on her own. We'll wait and see what Joel does. She snatched up a throw pillow and threw it at him, missing his right ear by less than an inch. Joel Wilson is probably in Ali Nassar's office right now, plotting how to find you. Or he's in Washington telling Senator Ferris that you murdered his entire team. Maybe. Stop being so calm. When she reached for the alarm clock, he moved in. She had a pretty good arm, and the heavy plastic looked like it could do some damage. She resisted for a moment when he wrapped his arms around her, but then rested her head on his chest. I haven't had much of a life, Mitch. Except for Anna, I wish I could forget everything that happened before I met you. But now... Her voice trailed off for a moment. You're the best at what you do. But even you can't survive with the whole world against you. Rapp stepped out onto the safari camp's terrace to find the rest of his team waiting. Donatella had retreated to the shade of a flowering arbor, and Kent Black was tanning in a lounge chair next to a pyramid of empty beer cans. Predictably, Azarov was sitting with his back to the building, sipping sparkling water. All of you have lived up to your reputations, he began as Claudia took a seat, and I want to thank you for everything you've done. What's next? Black asked, slurring a bit. There is no next. You've already stayed on a hell of a lot longer than I had a right to expect. What about that towelhead who's trying to frame you, Mitch? I thought we were going to pop him. It'd be better for all of us if I handled that myself. So you're releasing us, Donatella said. Yeah. And that brings us to the subject of payment. After expenses, Orion Consulting still has bank balances of... He looked over at Claudia. Just over $50 million. Okay. $50 million. Grisha, I know you got your cash up front, but... Do you want a cut? The Russian shook his head. Then Claudia and I are going to keep 10 to finish what we have to do. That leaves 40. Split between Kent and Donatella, that's 20 each. Black's head rolled forward off his lounge chair. What? Did you just say that you're going to transfer $20 million into my account? Yeah. And you're free to start contracting again. Or you can sit on a beach for the rest of your life. Just stay out of my way. Not a problem, he said, getting up and making rounds, shaking everyone's hand. When he got to Rapp, he just backed away cautiously.
It's been real, man.
Rapp waited for him to disappear around the corner before he spoke again.
Donatella, I don't have a lot of pull at the CIA right now, but it doesn't matter. Claudia's as good as anyone at this.
It'll take a couple of months, but she'll put a clean identity together for you and get you set up in New York. Obviously, you're going to have to get some work done to your face.
I have someone in Buenos Aires.
No contracts, no fashion industry, and no Italy, Rapp reminded her. She nodded.
I assume we won't meet again in this lifetime.
Not unless something goes very wrong. She glided up to him and gave him a lingering kiss on the mouth.
If you ever need someone to watch your ass again, don't hesitate to call.
Stepping back, she looked at the others.
It's been a pleasure working with all of you. Claudia, I'll send you my contact information when I get to Argentina.
I'll look forward to it.
And while you're there, ask them if there's something they can do about your nose.
Rapp tensed, but to his surprise, Donatella grinned, and the two women hugged before she wandered off. The sound of Kent Black's motorcycle speeding away reached Rapp just as he turned to the last man left on the terrace.
I assume you want something more than the dollar I paid you in Costa Rica.
Azarov set down his drink and stood.
It'll probably turn out to be nothing.
But?
Should any of the enemies I made in Russia ever decide to come back into my life, I might need help.
I'll be there.
He nodded respectfully, and then walked over to Claudia. She looked a little nervous when he kissed her hand, but the naked fear that was so obvious at their first meeting had faded. When Azarov was gone, she turned toward Rapp.
Just the two of us.
He popped the top off one of the unopened beers Black had left.
Yeah, just the two of us.
Chapter 53. CIA Headquarters, Langley, Virginia, USA. Irene Kennedy glanced over her reading glasses as her office door opened and her executive assistant slipped through.
I know you asked not to be disturbed.
Is everything all right, Jamie?
I'm honestly not sure how to answer that question. Joel Wilson is here to see you again.
I'm sorry. Did you say Joel Wilson?
Yes, ma'am.
The FBI agent had been last seen in Juba, where he and his team were ambushed. Intelligence was still piecemeal, but the best information circulating was that it was a case of mistaken identity. A local rebel leader thought Wilson and his people were a group of arms dealers led by someone called Jason Blaze. She, however, knew a bit more. Blaze was really a former Army Ranger who answered to the name Kent Black. Further, she had a description of his associates that bore an uncanny resemblance to Mitch Rapp, Claudia Dufour, Donatella Rahn, and Grisha Azarov. In all likelihood, Rapp and Claudia had led Wilson into a trap, the goal of which was to kill Ali Nassar without their direct involvement. Unfortunately, Nassar wasn't there.
A tragedy, really.
Not only was he a man who very much needed killing, but she hated to see such a beautifully conceived plan go wrong.
Irene, should I send him in?
Absolutely, Kennedy said.
She'd been working under the assumption that Wilson was dead, and in her experience, conversations with dead men tended to be extremely illuminating. She stood, but didn't immediately come out from behind her desk when Wilson appeared in the doorway. He was normally put together with a sterile meticulousness that very much embodied who he was. The hesitant gait, filthy clothing, and blackened eyes of the man entering her office were completely unfamiliar.
Dr. Kennedy, thank you for meeting with me without an appointment.
He offered his hand, but then seemed to realize how grimy it was, and withdrew it.
Are you all right, Joel? Should I call a medical team?
He shook his head, and she pointed him to a seating area at the corner of her office. He sat, and she handed him a bottle of water before taking a position across from him.
My understanding is that you and Director Nassar's men were attacked in South Sudan. Could you tell me what happened?
We tracked Rapp there through some emails he sent to Claudia Dufour. I don't know who attacked us, but it wasn't him.
She was intrigued.
Historically, Wilson blamed Mitch for everything bad that happened to him.
How do you know that?
Because he saved my life. One of Nassar's men, who wasn't really one of his men, tried to kill Mitch. When I yelled at him to cease fire, he turned on me. If Mitch hadn't shot him, I'd be dead.
Joel, I want you to slow down.
What do you mean it wasn't one of Nassar's men?
We questioned him.
I think he was ISIS. But I don't know if that means he infiltrated Saudi intelligence or if Nassar knew the whole time.
He pulled a phone from his pocket and almost dropped it trying to place it on the coffee table between them. She'd seen this before in her career. The man was broken.
He'd spent his entire life as a narcissist who believed that he was always right, always on the side of the virtuous. Now reality had imploded that self-image. Most people in his condition never recovered from the cognitive dissonance. A rare few managed to absorb their new position in the universe and adapt.
Which category did Joel Wilson fall into?
There are pictures on there of all of Nassar's men, and a recording of our interrogation of the one who survived. She picked up the phone and began flipping through the photos as he continued.
Nassar was playing me. The more I think about it, the clearer it becomes.
He was counting on my hatred of Mitch to blind me to everything else that was happening.
And he was right.
Kennedy set the phone down and appraised the man. His head was hanging loosely on his shoulders with a blank stare focused on the carpet.
In this business, it happens to us all eventually, Joel. The question is what you do about it.
I want to help, he said without hesitation. I want to find out if Nassar is connected with ISIS, and if he is, I want to take him down.
It was an interesting offer. Even more interesting, though, was whether it was an offer that Mitch Rapp had anticipated. Had he consciously foregone killing Wilson at the risk of allowing the FBI man to continue his vendetta? It was a level of restraint and strategic thinking that she wouldn't have necessarily attributed to her old friend. There was no question that Wilson was a gifted investigator. In some ways, it was his weakness. His ability to see the big picture was compromised by his obsession with fine detail. In this case, though, it was those fine details that needed attention. The big picture was her job. Is that a sincere offer, Joel? He finally met her gaze.
Of course it is.
Does anyone know you're here?
What?
Why?
Answer the question.
She could see the wheels of his mind turning. He was wondering if she was involved with Rapp and desperate to hide that involvement. More to the point, he was wondering if answering in the negative would end with him buried in Langley's basement.
Finally, his body sagged.
No one knows.
I came here first. I haven't talked to anyone.
She pressed a button on a phone sitting next to her, and her assistant reappeared.
Jamie, I need to make sure that there's no record of Agent Wilson leaving Juba or arriving in the U.S. Also call General Jayuzi in South Sudan. Ask him if he's spoken with Ali Nassar. If so, ask him if it's not too late to have him confirm Agent Wilson's death and to destroy the bodies that were left behind.
Wilson didn't even react to what she was saying. Apparently, he'd decided that he deserved whatever fate she had planned for him.
That's not going to be cheap, Jamie said. Is there any limit to what I can pay him?
No. But I want you to be clear that we're buying an exclusive.
If I hear that he's sold any of this information again, I'll be Her voice faded for a moment as she chose her next words. Inconsolably disappointed. I think he'll understand your meaning. Anything else? That'll do for now. Jamie disappeared, and Wilson watched the door close as though he were in a gas chamber. What about Mitch? She said. Do you know where he is? Wilson shook his head. He left me a long way outside of Juba. Last time I saw him, he was driving back toward the city. It seemed clear that Rapp had seen the same thing in Joel Wilson that she did. He could have killed the man with little fear of repercussion. Instead, he'd left him with a phone full of intelligence and the freedom to use it as he pleased. What are you going to do with me? Wilson said, becoming uncomfortable with the silence drawing out between them. For now, I think it's in our best interest to let the world think you're dead. Of course, we'll call Director Miller and tell him that's not the case. If it's acceptable to you, I'd also like to ask him to let me use you to lead the effort to identify the men on your phone and their connection to Ali Nassar. I have good intelligence analysts, but what we need here is an investigator. He just stared at her, stunned. You were expecting something else? Yes. No. I mean, I'd love to be involved in getting Nassar. Then why don't you have one of my assistants send for some clothes for you and show you where the showers are? In the meantime, I'll assemble your team. Chapter 54. Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. The basement had been lined with cubicles, and the overhead fixtures were dimmed, causing each workstation to glow with the light of its computer monitor. Ironically, the secret to effective intelligence analysis was the sharing of ideas, but in this case, that kind of an exchange was impossible. Ali Nassar's goal was neither truth nor accuracy. What he needed now was to conjure an alternate reality so convincing that it persuaded even the analysts who had created it. As he walked across the room, the people who noticed him stood, some even attempting an awkward salute. He ignored them. They weren't soldiers, or the disciplined operatives he'd surrounded himself with since graduating from university. They were the young technology experts who now reigned supreme in the intelligence-gathering field. Nassar was wary of them, not only because he lacked any real understanding of how they did what they did, but because their talent was always inversely proportional to their faith. For these men, God, country, and authority were meaningless when compared to what they saw in those screens. The most gifted, and thus least devoted of the analysts assigned to this detail, had been placed along the back wall. He swiveled in his chair when Nassar stopped in the open door of his cubicle, but didn't stand as the others had. What have you discovered? Nassar said, ignoring the lack of respect. We haven't been able to get confirmation, but our suspicion is that all our men are dead. Why no confirmation? The only thing we have to go on is interviews of people who witnessed the battle, and most seem unreliable. Either they were trying to get away from the fighting, or they're so war-weary that they didn't pay much attention. We've matched up the different accounts to create the most probable chain of events, but I still can't guarantee accuracy. What have you put together? After Abdo's men attacked, it quickly turned into a melee. It was impossible to tell who was shooting at whom, and most of the fighting was done inside the church. One car left the scene with an unknown number of passengers, but we don't know where it went and we haven't heard from any of our people. Most likely it was one or more of Abdo's men escaping the fighting, and now they're on the run. He has a reputation for punishing cowardice pretty harshly. And the bodies of my men. They were burned along with the church. The rebels did this? No, sir. It appears to have been done by government troops. We're not certain why. The chain of command in Juba is hard to follow.
It might have just been a decision by low-level police.
Nassar nodded. While the fire made it impossible to confirm that all his men were dead, it also made identifying the corpses difficult. In that way, the fire had been a gift. If photos of the men he'd sent had been taken and given to a foreign intelligence agency, they would be quickly identified as not working for the Saudi General Intelligence Directorate. And after that, it was possible that they could be associated with ISIS.
Do we know if the FBI man Joel Wilson was among the dead?
It appears that he was. The local police said that one of the men was white, and they took his wallet before the fire started.
The young man used his mouse to pull up a photo of Joel Wilson's North Dakota driver's license. In his peripheral vision, Nassar saw his assistant appear and motion him to a conference room along the wall.
Carry on. I want to be updated immediately with any new information.
Yes, sir.
We've finally made direct contact with Abdo, Hamid Safar said as Nassar entered and closed the door.
And?
He confirmed that it was his men who attacked, and that they did so because they believed our men were associates of Jason Blaze. He's also agreed to have his people swear that an American fitting Mitch Rapp's description killed Wilson, though he wants a significant amount of money to do so.
Pay him what he asks, Nassar said.
While the story wasn't without flaws, no one would expect concrete evidence in that part of the world. All he needed to do was generate enough suspicion to motivate the Americans. Now the murdered man in question wasn't a Saudi national with potential ties to terrorism. It was an American FBI agent doing the president's bidding. The Americans would have no choice but to dedicate a significant amount of resources to this manhunt. It would also have the effect of frightening any U.S. operatives involved. A Mitch Rapp willing to kill American agents would create a great number of nervous trigger fingers, and would likely muffle any criticism if attempts to take him alive failed.
Contact your counterpart at the FBI, Hamid. Tell them about Rapp's involvement in Wilson's murder, and put them in touch with Abdo.
Understood.
Has there been any progress in finding Rapp and his people?
None. But the Americans trained him and are familiar with his associates, methods, and finances. With improved cooperation from them, he won't stay invisible for long.
Nassar sat at the small conference table and dismissed his assistant with a wave of the hand. How much had Rapp learned? And did it matter? Everyone who knew of Nassar's involvement was dead, all in a way that would strongly implicate the CIA assassin. Now Rapp had fled his base in Juba and was on the run. More important, the entire Western world would soon be hunting him. He knew far too much about their clandestine wars to ever be allowed to defend himself in a hearing. Even Irene Kennedy, his stalwart supporter for decades, would be forced to abandon him. She was loyal, but not stupid enough to commit political suicide, and potentially end up in prison. Despite all this, it would be a mistake to underestimate the man. Wounded animals could be extraordinarily dangerous, and Mitch Rapp was no exception. Nassar had already doubled his personal security detail, but now it seemed wise to move to an undisclosed location. Rapp was the most talented assassin of his generation, but he couldn't kill what he couldn't find. Nassar's phone rang with an immediately recognizable number. As always, he considered rejecting it, but the conference room was soundproof and swept for listening devices daily. There was no better place to have this unavoidable conversation.
Yes, he said, picking up. Is Rapp dead?
Mullah Halabi's tone suggested he already knew the answer to the question.
No, it's my understanding that my men are.
As are mine, Nassar shot back. He hadn't asked for Halabi's men, and their constant presence was becoming a significant problem. Reminding the mullah of this, though, would be counterproductive. He was a dangerous man, and it was clear that he had infiltrated all levels of Saudi Arabia's government. Joel Wilson's investigation led him to South Sudan. Rap was already gone, and he was attacked by a local rebel group. The area is in the midst of a civil war, which is undoubtedly why Rap chose it.
And yet you survived.
I was called back to Riyadh.
Allah must have great plans for you.
I am his servant.
Indeed, the ISIS leader said with an obvious lack of conviction.
This may turn out to be an ideal situation, Nassar started. We've begun a disinformation campaign that will cause the Americans to believe that Rapp was there and that he killed Wilson. We know perhaps death isn't Rapp's immediate destiny, Ali. If he's taken back to America in chains, what havoc might he wreak? Certainly the political enemies of the CIA would line up against him. Would there be public hearings? If so, Rapp might reveal secrets that would shake his godless country to its core.
Yes, but in that kind of a hearing, my relationship with you would be uncovered.
And then the king would put you to death.
It is a man's greatest hope to have the privilege of being martyred.
The line went dead, and Nassar slammed his phone against the table. It was easy for that cave-dwelling goatherd to speak of the glory of martyrdom. Nassar, however, had no intention of dying or ending up in one of Faisal's dungeons. He had a great many things left to do in this life, and Mitch Rapp was the last great obstacle to accomplishing them.
Chapter 55. East of Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Remember when I told you I thought you were insane? Claudia said, looking through the jet's window at a private airstrip cut into the desert. Now I'm sure of it.
Rapp was dozing on a sofa near the back of the plane.
It's going to be fine.
How is it going to be fine? She said.
Ali Nassar is desperate to see you dead, and now we're flying into his backyard. Do you think King Faisal's going to save you? It doesn't matter what you've done for him and his country in the past, Mitch. He's an old man, and Nassar will have poisoned him against you. He's probably personally sharpening the sword they're going to use to behead you.
Faisal never does anything himself, Rapp said, adjusting into a more comfortable position.
He's probably just overseeing the sharpening.
Stop trying to deflect.
Stop worrying so much.
I'm your logistics coordinator. It's my job.
And you're good at it.
Don't patronize me, Mitch. Just don't.
Rapp had hoped his relationship with Claudia would achieve the balance and ease he'd been searching for. She was pragmatic and adaptable, lacking both his late wife's naivete and Donatella's violent unpredictability. Unfortunately, it seemed that anyone he got close to was eventually sucked into the chaos and darkness that swirled around him. And it was time to admit that he was making it worse. He just couldn't stop testing her. From the standpoint of logistics, she was virtually flawless, one of the best he'd ever worked with. But he was still concerned with how she dealt with the stress of life and death situations, and how their relationship would affect her judgment. Or was that just a cop-out? Maybe he was testing himself. Hell, maybe he was trying to drive her away. The idea of losing someone again constantly lurked at the back of his mind. Thoughts of his own death didn't concern him all that much. But the idea of another funeral, and the emptiness and rage that followed was the one thing that had the power to scare him. On the other hand, one day he'd be forced to look back and assess his life. Was numbness the word he'd wanted to use to summarize it? Mitch, she prompted.
You better not have fallen asleep during this conversation.
Once again, he was reminded of how much he missed Scott Coleman. The former SEAL would be sitting silently at the front of the plane, cleaning his weapon and waiting for orders.
I'm awake. This is too much of a risk for not enough reward. If you want to convince someone of your innocence, it should be the Americans. And even then you should let me set up a neutral meeting place. Somewhere with a back door if things go—
The wheels hit the ground and the engines reversed, causing her to fall silent. Too late. Rapp rose to his feet and walked toward the cockpit. The pilot was scanning an empty building to the north as he brought the aircraft to a stop. His hand was white-knuckled on the throttle, waiting to slam it forward again if necessary. Take a left after that hangar, Rapp said, pointing through the windscreen.
It says that's a restricted area.
Just do it, Paco. As he eased the aircraft forward, a military contingent appeared. The pilot began to slow, but Rapp took a seat next to him and pushed the throttle forward again.
I think they're serious, Paco said, pointing at four machine gunners tracking them from the top of armored vehicles. Are you sure about this?
I'm sure. While there had never been any formal introductions, it was likely he'd figured out who Rapp was by now. And in light of that, he'd decided it was better not to question orders. Stop by that building up there, Rapp said, slipping out of the seat and heading toward the back. He pointed at Claudia. We're up.
What? What's that mean?
The plane came to a stop and he opened the door before lowering the steps. She followed him into the heat and glare of the sun, looking around nervously at the soldiers watching them. Normally, Rapp would have been wearing a hat and sunglasses in an effort to thwart the cameras that had become so ubiquitous in modern society. Today, though, he walked slowly, scanning the airstrip with his face completely exposed. Claudia put a hand on his back and pushed him forward.
What the hell are you doing? I don't know where you think you're going, but could we at least get there?
He adjusted his trajectory toward a Gulfstream G550. David Graves, wearing a dark suit and seemingly unaffected by the heat, was standing at the base of the steps leading onto the aircraft. He watched them carefully, moving his hand toward the weapon holstered beneath his left arm. His reaction drove home for Rapp the seriousness of his situation. They'd known each other for years and still got together at the range every month or so, usually grabbing a beer afterward. By the time they made it to within 10 feet, his hand was wrapped around the grip of the SIG P226 that Rapp himself had shot many times. It wasn't surprising. Word was going around the intelligence community that Joel Wilson was dead and that Rapp was responsible. What are you doing here, Mitch?
I'm not here, Dave.
There are about 50 Saudis behind you who might disagree. Graves glanced at Claudia, but then pressed a finger to his earpiece, suggesting that he was receiving a transmission.
Are you sure?
He responded into the microphone on his wrist. Do you want me to come in? I think you should have at least some—
Yes. Understood.
He stepped aside, and Rapp followed Claudia as she moved toward the steps. When they entered the aircraft, she stopped short. Irene Kennedy rose from her chair and approached, giving Claudia a short embrace as Rapp chose a seat near a section of fuselage with no windows.
I'm so glad to see you, Claudia, Kennedy said. I've been worried. Are you all right?
Yes, but what are you doing here?
Mitch kept refusing to call you.
I called him, she said, indicating toward the chair next to Rapp's and taking a facing seat. And I'm looking forward to hearing about what you've been doing over the past month. Grisha Azarov, Donatella Ron, and Kent Black.
She shook her head.
Desperate times.
Word is Joel Wilson's dead, Rapp said. Last time I saw him, he looked okay. You didn't—
No, of course not.
She twisted in her seat. Joel, could you come out here, please? The FBI man appeared from the secure communications space at the back, looking a bit sheepish.
Joel's been working to identify the men who were killed in Juba, and helping to clear you in the deaths of the Saudi nationals you're accused of killing.
Are you making any progress? Rapp asked.
It's hard to get anything concrete, Wilson replied. But we're building a pretty decent circumstantial case for your innocence.
Rapp pulled out the fake passport he'd been using and tossed it to the man.
It's not exactly ironclad, but you might be able to get some mileage out of it.
Wilson flipped through the pages, looking at the entry and exit stamps.
Every little bit helps. Let me go back and get some scans.
Rapp returned his attention to Kennedy. Is our meeting with the king still on?
Yes, she responded, glancing at her watch.
In fact, we're running late. Claudia, why don't you wait here for us?
I think I should come, she protested. I have all the details of what we've done. Times, dates, places, transportation. I could help fill in anything that Joel hasn't been able to figure out.
I understand, and we'll need you to coordinate with him later. But for now, I'd like to keep you out of this as much as possible. And besides, it will give you a chance to give Anna a call. She and Tommy are having a wonderful time together, but she misses her mother.
The lights of the Erga Palace's fountain had come on, bathing the pillared entrance in a warm glow. Guards were plentiful, all carrying assault rifles, and all very interested in the limousine gliding past them.
Stop here, Rapp said in Arabic to the driver.
What?
He responded.
Why? I've been told to take you to the entrance where the king's assistant is waiting.
Stop here, Rapp repeated. The man had no choice but to do so. Rapp was the king's guest, and as such, his wishes were to be carried out to the letter.
You don't mind a little walk, do you, Irene?
An excellent idea, she said, following him out into the quickly cooling evening.
What are we doing? Wilson said, looking around at the guards before leaving the relative safety of the limo.
Relax, Rapp said, putting a friendly hand in his back and ushering him toward the palace entrance. I just needed a little air. In truth, Rapp wanted to make sure this little visit was as public as possible. He needed the guards, many of whom would be loyal to Ali Nassar, to see not only him and Irene Kennedy walking freely into a meeting with the king, but also the late Joel Wilson strolling along with them. They met Faisal's assistant on the palace steps and, after some strained pleasantries, were led to a marble and gilt audience room near the back of the palace. As expected, the king wasn't there. He liked to make an entrance, and they were forced to wait. The only seat was a gold and red velvet throne on an elevated platform, so they had to stand. After 5 minutes, Faisal appeared and struggled into his seat. The platform had been getting progressively shorter as he aged, and Rapp noted that it might be about time for another adjustment.
I have agreed to this meeting and excluded Director Nassar at your request, Dr. Kennedy. I do this out of respect for you, and in acknowledgement of what Mr. Rapp has done to defend my kingdom in the past. But I want to be clear that I believe him to be a murderer.
Despite their long relationship, Faisal didn't look at him. Yet another reminder of how quickly political loyalties could change.
Your Highness, Kennedy said, I'd like to introduce Joel Wilson, the FBI agent who was helping Director Nassar try to find Mitch.
I'm quite familiar with Agent Wilson, Faisal said, though I was told you were dead.
No, sir. One of Director Nassar's men tried to kill me. But Mitch managed to prevent it.
That's a very serious accusation. Do you have proof?
Is the equipment we requested available?
The king pointed toward an ornate cabinet against the wall. Wilson opened it, docking his laptop and retrieving a remote control. A moment later, the lights dimmed, and his screen was projected on the wall.
This first image is a list of dates and places where Mitch has traveled since leaving the CIA. They are corroborated by his passport. You can see that it would be impossible for him to have killed your man in Paris, or Qadr Sultan in Saudi Arabia.
You're offering entries in a forged passport as proof, Faisal asked.
Please let him finish, Kennedy said.
Thank you. We have corroborating evidence from various cameras in airports and other locations, all time-stamped.
He scrolled through them, but Rapp's natural ability to keep his face out of photos worked against him. When Wilson brought up an image of a lengthy telephone record, Rapp had had enough.
Stop. Wilson looked over at him. I was just getting to—
Rapp stepped forward and locked eyes with the aging monarch.
You know damn well that I didn't kill those people, because I'm telling you I didn't kill them.
Why would I lie? Why would I be standing here in front of you instead of putting a bullet in your head and hoping the next asshole who sits in that chair is better?
Faisal jerked back, alarm and confusion reading on his face. It was probably the first time he'd ever been spoken to that way.
Mitch, Kennedy cautioned. But the old man pushed himself to his feet and spoke over her.
You tell me all this, but then you insist that Ali not be present to defend himself. He's been unfailingly loyal to me and worked tirelessly against ISIS.
Listen to yourself, Rapp responded. Even you don't believe what you're saying. You either need to run this country or turn it over to someone who can, because you've been played. And I can't tell if you're too stupid to realize it or too old to care.
Guards! The king shouted,
and a moment later two men armed with HKG-36s burst through the door. Kennedy took a few steps back while Wilson scurried for the edge of the room.
Rapp held his position. He wasn't finished yet.
One guard took a position to his right, unsure what Faisal wanted him to do.
Rapp took advantage of the confusion and swept his legs from under him while grabbing the barrel of his gun. He jerked it out of his hands and rammed the butt of it into the head of the second guard, whose knees buckled. Rapp dropped the rifle and snatched the Browning high power from the man's holster before he dropped to the marble floor.
The remaining palace guards registered the commotion, and he could hear their shouts as they fanned out behind him. They were even less inclined to act, though. Rapp had his weapons lined up on Faisal's forehead, and the slightest twitch of his finger would put an end to their king.
Are we going to continue our conversation, Highness, or are we going to end it?
The events of the last few seconds had come too fast for the man, and it took him a beat to process what had happened. When he did, he dismissed his guards. Rapp kept the weapon lined up as they dragged the two unconscious men away. When he heard the door close, he dropped the gun on the floor.
20 years ago, would you have put this much trust in a power-hungry piece of shit like Ali Nassar?
Faisal sat and let a good 30 seconds pass before he responded.
No.
You've been playing a dangerous game, blinding your people with religion and hoping that you could control them.
But now you've lost that control, and you're too old and weak to get it back.
Is this the legacy you want to leave? Do you want to be remembered as the last king of Saudi Arabia?
Faisal seemed to lose the strength to sit fully erect in his throne.
So, instead of the radicals, I should turn my kingdom over to the Americans? To the Christians? Why? Because you believe I've been betrayed, but offer no real proof?
We have a great deal more than what you just saw, Kennedy said, returning to Rapp's side. We have a tape of one of Nassar's men pledging allegiance to ISIS. We have photos of a number of his people that we've been able to associate with Mullah Halabi. We have information putting Director Nassar in Brussels when Maya Zaman was killed. But I suspect none of this will be enough for you. And in light of that, I believe that you should give Director Nassar an opportunity to prove his own innocence.
How?
By doing nothing. Mitch and I would like you to walk us to our car, behaving in a friendly and grateful manner. After that, we'd like you to have your people pick up Nassar's assistant, Hamid Safar, and hold him in solitary confinement.
Then you're asking me to interrogate an intelligence official with no evidence against him?
Not at all, Your Highness. If you like, invite him here as your guest.
Just make sure it's impossible for him to communicate for a few days.
And you expect this to prove something?
She nodded. We've diverted significant human and electronic surveillance resources to track Director Nassar, who's currently in a safe house outside of Bisha. If he's innocent, I'd expect him to contact you and demand to know where his man is and why you were meeting with Mitch. If he's guilty, then he may present us with an interesting opportunity.
Chapter 56. Bisha, Saudi Arabia. Ali Nassar went through the photos again, putting them in chronological order and expanding them to fill the computer monitor. Taken in their entirety, they told a story that couldn't be denied. The first depicted Mitch Rapp and Claudio Dufour deplaning outside of Riyadh and then entering a Gulfstream G550. He deplaned again shortly thereafter, this time with Irene Kennedy and a man who was unmistakably Joel Wilson. He stared at the blurry image of the FBI agent's face for a long time, trying to calculate what it meant. Had he been working with Kennedy the entire time? Impossible. His career had been destroyed by her and Rapp. His hatred for them was both well-documented and well-founded. The only answer was that the attack in South Sudan had indeed been a trap set by Mitch Rapp. Was it he and Wilson who had escaped in the car seen leaving the scene? Had they taken a prisoner for questioning? Was that why the bodies had been burned? He scrolled forward, pausing at the photos of the three Americans entering Erga Palace, but then moving on to the much more telling images of them leaving. Rapp and Wilson showed no signs of animosity, and King Faisal not only shook the CIA assassin's hand, but then walked him to a waiting limousine. None of Nassar's people had been close enough to overhear their conversation, but the gratitude in the old man's body language was impossible to miss. What did the Americans know? It seemed almost certain that they had identified some of the ISIS men sent to Juba. Had they found evidence of his involvement in the death of Maya Zaman? Of his involvement in financing terrorism and undermining the Saudi government? The king wasn't aware of his location, but he did have Nassar's phone number. Yet he hadn't used it to summon him for an audience. Why? Was the evidence the Americans possessed so damning that he wouldn't even be afforded the opportunity to defend himself? Questions were infinite, but answers were non-existent. He dialed his assistant for the fifth time since receiving the photos, and for the fifth time got no answer. It was beyond unusual. With perhaps three exceptions over the years they'd been working together, Safar had picked up his calls within a few rings. Now, there was nothing but silence. Nassar could feel his time running out, and as it did, his rage intensified. He refused to accept that he had been outmaneuvered by a thug like Mitch Rapp. This had to have been a concerted effort by Irene Kennedy and multiple foreign agencies. Perhaps even the king. He reached for his phone again, this time dialing the number of his assistant's wife. Unlike her husband, she picked up immediately. "I've been trying to contact Hamid," Nassar said. "Is he with you?"
"No. He was taken away hours ago." "What's happening, Director?
Be quiet. Who took him away?"
"King Faisal's men.
Where is he now?"
"I don't know. They didn't tell me anything. I've been trying to call him, but he won't answer.
Nassar disconnected the line and closed his eyes, trying to control his breathing. If Faisal had taken his man, there could be no more confusion about his own situation. Safar was strong and dedicated to the cause, but no man could hold out forever. If he was being interrogated by Faisal's men, he would break after 3 or 4 days. If he was being questioned by Rapp,
The time would be significantly shorter.
Nassar dialed a number he'd been given and listened to it ring. The time seemed to stretch into infinity as he waited. Finally, a now familiar voice came on.
What can I do for you, Ali?
Mullah Halabi gave nothing away, but it seemed likely that he had received similar photos of Rapp's visit to the palace.
It appears that the Americans have discovered our relationship and informed King Faisal.
That's unfortunate. Nassar waited for him to say more, but the man remained silent.
If I fall into Mitch Rapp's hands, I'll be questioned.
I'm quite sure you will be. But what will you tell him? That I'm determined to destroy the Saudi royalty by any means necessary and claim their land for the caliphate? I hardly think this would come as a surprise.
I can do a great deal for you.
This was true when you were Saudi Arabia's intelligence chief. But now, you're just a man on the run. I have many men on the run at my disposal. Every one of them loyal zealots who want nothing more than to die for me.
Martyrs are of little strategic value, Nassar said, trying to keep his voice even.
He knew that the outcome of this conversation would determine whether he lived or died.
I have intimate knowledge of military operations and intelligence methods that will be impossible to alter quickly. I also still control significant financial resources. Bring me in and allow me to make my case. If you're not convinced, you can kill me.
He heard muffled voices. Halabi speaking to someone else in the room.
You'll be sent an address, the mullah said finally. I suggest you begin your preparations to leave.
The line went dead, and Nassar swept a hand across his desk, knocking most of its contents to the floor. A glass mug shattered loudly on the tiles, prompting one of his men to burst through the door to his left.
Is everything all right, Director?
Bring my car around. We're leaving in 10 minutes.
Where are we?
Don't question me, Nassar shouted. Just carry out my orders.
The man disappeared as Nassar slid a USB drive into one of his computer's ports. The worm it contained would download thousands of critical files, before covering the theft by wreaking havoc on the General Intelligence Directorate's computer system. Most important, though, it would drain a number of government accounts and deposit the money into anonymous ones he controlled. It was a protocol he'd set up years ago when he took his first hesitant steps toward undermining the Saudi royalty. He'd never expected to have to use it, or to have to flee the country he believed he was destined to rule. Again, the rage washed over him. Rapp was back safe in the arms of his country. And he was laughing.
Nassar looked past his two security men at the lights of Mecca shining through the windshield. The journey there had taken almost 5 hours, but he still found it impossible to collect his thoughts. All he could feel was an increasing sense of disorientation. It was all gone. His position and prestige, his opulent home and private aircraft, his sons and the powerful friends he had so carefully cultivated. He would spend the rest of his life in squalor, surrounded by fanatics, and at the pleasure of a religious fanatic who believed that Allah spoke through him, and him only. Nassar tried to clear his mind and focus on the immediate steps that needed to be taken. The only thing that mattered now was convincing Halabi of his value. Soon, though, he found his thoughts drifting to the future. The former Iraqi officers whom Halabi had surrounded himself with presented an opportunity. While they were far more competent than the rank-and-file ISIS fighter, they were also far less fanatical. They continued to be concerned with such worldly trappings as power, survival,
and money. Subverting their loyalties would be no small task, but if done carefully and over time, it might be possible. With their support and the convenient martyrdom of the mullah, the fanatics could be brought into line. Patience would be the most difficult part, straining even his iron discipline. The thirst for revenge, on Rap, on the king, was burning inside him with an intensity that would have to be temporarily quenched. He had the knowledge and contacts to use Isis to its maximum potential now, but with every hour that passed, those advantages would fade. Intelligence was a commodity with a very short shelf life. He would have to resist letting his passions overpower his reason. Mullah Halabi would be watching for any hint of disloyalty, and would deal with it quickly and permanently.
"Director," his driver said, "the address you gave us is just ahead."
Nassar squinted at a garage door lit by a single security lamp. As he was searching for signs of life, the door began to open.
"Pull in."
"Do you want us to clear? Just pull in." The interior was poorly illuminated, but Nassar was able to make out a lone man standing at the back of the building. It looked like some kind of shipping depot, and there were a number of trucks lined up in the space. It would be sufficient to hide a significant force, although there was no sign of that kind of activity. Another decision point had been reached. Did he exit the car with his men in case this was an ambush? Or did he use this as an opportunity to display his fealty and submission?
There was little choice.
His immediate survival and eventual success depended entirely on the mullah's trust.
"Do you see that man, Director? Should we get out?"
"Let's wait a moment," he said, pulling a Browning pistol from its holster. The two men in the front seats had been with him for years and had fulfilled their duties impeccably. It was a shame that their service had to come to an end. He lifted the weapon and fired in quick succession, putting a single round into each man's head. They slumped forward, and he stepped from the vehicle, leaving his gun on the seat.
Chapter 57. Northern Iraq.
"He's still on course toward your position. One click out." Rapp remained motionless, lying partially buried by the sand in an elevated position over a roadbed. The steady voice of Marcus Dumond in Langley inspired even more confidence than he remembered. Not that Claudia and the group of misfits he'd put together had been bad, but there was something to be said for a team of professional, motivated, and patriotic government agents armed with cutting-edge technology. The less drama, the better, as far as he was concerned.
"They should be right on top of you, Mitch. I'm using thermal on the surveillance drones, so I'm not sure if they're running headlights."
"Copy."
They weren't. The hum of an engine was the first thing to reach him. It was a moonless night, but a sky full of stars was just enough for Rapp to make out an SUV emerging from the blackness. He followed it with his eyes as it passed and continued north. According to the agency's maps, there was nowhere for it to get off until a small village about 10 clicks farther on. The hope was that it was their final destination, but hope had never been worth much in Iraq. Just as likely they would pass through the village and climb into a mountain range pockmarked with caves that no one knew anything about. If that was the case, this was going to turn into another of the clusterfucks that he'd spent his career dealing with. Rapp gave them a 2-minute lead and then stood, picking up the dirt bike Scott Coleman had lent him. It was an all-electric model made by Zero, and, as advertised, it didn't make a sound when he started it. Slipping on a pair of prototype night vision goggles, he twisted the throttle and was treated to a disorienting combination of acceleration and silence.
"Are you getting the overhead feed, Mitch?"
All he could see was the hazy green terrain in front of him. "I've got nothing."
"Shit, hold on."
He heard something that sounded like Dumont banging on his extremely expensive electronic equipment and was rewarded with an overhead map in his peripheral vision. It displayed speed and direction for both him and